This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, 153 pounds of fun, to be accurate, but it's raw steel and sinew, however you say that, Mike DeTillier. How you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you, Tommy.
Highs of 85 today, a little drier feel to the weather, 85 tomorrow, chance for showers, but the tropics are quiet as we approach Wednesday, statistical speak, peak of hurricane season. So we'll take it. Mike, I'm looking at the final individual statistics here. I can tell you one thing right away that jumps out at me. St. Louis, 27 rushes, 29 passes. Saints, 22 rushes, 46 passes. You ain't going to win the game that way.
You won't. Not in this league. It's not going to happen. And to me, that certainly jumps out along with the penalties. Good gracious.
Let me tell you, and look, I love the Saints. I really do. My neighbor saw me outside with a jersey. I said, you like the Saints? Yeah, I like the Saints. What do you mean? What the hell does that mean? Do you like? Yeah, I like the Saints. I don't know if he's got beef with the NFL. I don't know what the deal is. But you got to line up. And I saw a guy at the car wash, and we were talking about it, about, you know, there was some positive things. But you can't line up for a field goal. Come on, brah. Really?
Tommy, everybody wants a rebuild till they see it.
Yeah.
Okay? You saw it yesterday. It's amazing to me.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody not be able to line up for a field goal before, though.
It is sort of head-scratching a little bit, but early in the season, you're going to see these type of games from teams just trying to get some footing under them. Mm-hmm. And you got a lot of new guys on this team, and it's going to take that a little while to piece together. You know, we talked about this Friday. What was the advantage of the Cardinals? Quarterback, Kyler Murray. You got a guy that's been there, done that. And he's dynamic now. You got to give him credit. Man, he is a load because not only he throws the football well, but it's his escapability and ability to run the ball. And if you looked at this game again, the Cardinals average 5.4 yards a rush. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people say, well, Kyler Murray did some of that. You can't take that away. It's still part of the rushing game. And you saw the two dynamic receiving guys. And when they needed something, and really needed something, Trey McBride, you know, he seemed to always be open. The other one was Marvin Harrison Jr., mm-hmm. The big receiver. So offensively, when you needed something, you had it, but you had a running game going. Defensively, the Cardinals, you could tell, they trying to hide the fact that their corner play is not real good? They gave you a lot of short stuff, and for the most part, I thought the game plan for the Saints was built upon that. Let's hit this short, quick passing stuff. Maybe we get a broken tackle and we get up the field. And you were able to do a little bit of that. But, again, I think what you got is what you got right now. That this – and you, do you trust your offensive line to protect your quarterback for any length of time? And inside, boy, you got – they got any kind of pressure, it came from right up the middle.
But you know,
right above the guards.
I made some notes here. Chris Olave early in the second quarter, middle of the second quarter, just falls down, doesn't get up. It's not college. I don't know what's going on there. They got this surprise formation, right? And they can't execute that. So you waste the look there. Deuce talked about it on the broadcast about the little things and sloppiness, and it's just I didn't expect the sloppiness. I didn't.
Tommy, that's something we talked about all week. I really thought you were going to see it. You're going to see it again next week and the following. The sloppiness
really?
Of this play. I really believe that. I really believe early in this season, because of the way you practice today and you don't practice as a unit a lot, you don't have any games under you, the sloppiness is going to be there. There is that part of this game where just the way the rules are set up and you don't get a lot of practice time and preseason, I mean, it's the biggest mirage in the world. It shows you a few things here and there, but that's about it. The established teams, they get it. They maybe don't need it as much as teams like the Saints do to try to you know, just whatever you have going for you to piece that together. So the sloppiness is still going to be there next week.
Let me say that I said St. Louis earlier, apparently, the Cardinals. I got a lot of stuff on my mind. That's not the audience's fault. It's some family stuff, but we're going to get through this. That's fine. When it comes to the sloppiness, though, Mike, you would think as a new coach – Maybe you can't make a guy tackle. You can't make a guy, Kool-Aid McKinstry. I texted you, as a matter of fact, because he don't want to tackle. It seemed like he can't cover and he don't want to tackle. So I don't know what the hell you're doing out there, honestly. Tell me about Kool-Aid.
Well, with Kool-Aid, it was not a good day at the office for him. They picked on him.
And
it
ain't going to get better. Let me tell you, that's what he's got on video now. So hang on, because it's coming next week.
What? And to follow it. I mean, the one thing, one, with a young player, they're going to test you out. And secondly, you got beat pretty good yesterday. Marvin Harrison Jr. did a number on you. But, okay, you near the sidelines with Trey Benson. Push him out of bounds if you're not going to tackle him. Mm-hmm. You can't play two-hand touch.
Yeah.
And when you sent me that, I told you, well, at least he got both hands on him.
Yeah.
But that was about it.
He didn't grab the flag, but at least he got both hands on him.
So, again, this is part of the rebuild. And a lot of people in the offseason, that's all they screamed about. Tear it down to the studs. Okay, once you start that, you understand what it's going to look like. This is what it's going to look like in a rebuild.
Then they got texted somebody here. At one point, Kool-Aid gets beat, and all he had to do was look for the – you know, I'm not trying to be a coach here or anything, but he had no idea where the ball was, and it's like that's when you read the receiver's eyes, right, and how Kool-Aid at that level could not do that. I don't understand that. I'm confused about that.
He seemed to be a little off on where the ball was yesterday. Now, some of that, when you have a quarterback like Murray, who's throwing that ball from a little different angle, and he's on the move, it catches you. But the physicality of Marvin Harrison Jr. showed up yesterday, and him being able to beat Kool-Aid McKinstry. And you could almost tell as the game went on, he was like, hey, just throw it up. I'm going to get it. And you know, with Trey McBride, it was, will somebody cover him? Somebody. Okay, he is the one guy Murray goes to over and over and over again when he needs something, and he was seemingly always open when they really needed something.
Yeah, we talked about him on Friday.
We talked again. He said, "This is it's not like Columbus finding America here." Mm-hmm. He did this last year. He runs the same routes he did a year ago. Him and Murray on the exact same page on where he has to go, and he puts himself in a position that he gives you that big target because Trey's 6'5 and a half. So when you're a 5'9 quarterback, okay, you looking for that big really? Man difference really? Downfield.
5'9.
He's okay, that's maybe stretching
it. They had a back that was 5'7 that they said was 5'7, and he towered over Kyler Murray. So I'm wondering at that point, is he really 5'9?
And not put it to you this way. He came to the Manning camp, and we were eye to eye.
Either way, he can play. Let's put it that way.
Yes, he can. Yes, he can.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I'm getting some texts here. Thoughts on letting the clock run out at the half with three timeouts. Oh. Juwan Johnson will forever be known for penalties and drop balls. I said St. Louis. They moved in 1988. I still feel occasionally I refer to the Colts as Baltimore, as do I. Mike, do you ever do that? You're old school. Do you ever?
Not those, but you know what I've messed up is Chargers.
San Diego?
Yeah.
Well, that's relatively recent. You got a pass for that.
Every once in a while, I almost kind of catch myself saying San Diego Chargers, but we know now it's L.A.
Tim
Chargers.
Says Houston Oilers or not?
No, not that one.
No, I don't either because they're gone. They got the Tennessee Titans or the Texans, but it's no more Oilers. All right, we'll pick it up when we come back. Mike Dettelier, our guest, nice enough to get up with us, spend an hour. He'll be second-guessing at the Silver Slipper tonight with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. 6:23, a little bit late traffic, WWL. 6:28, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst. Mike, were they easing Alvin Kamara into it yesterday, or was that part of the game plan, or do you know?
That part I wouldn't really know, because he's going to have to carry the the blood flow for this football team.
He's got to be the bell cow, right?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. Kendra Miller, I really thought played well yesterday. Mm-hmm. He showed a burst and an ability to get up the field and field vision we had not seen. He's a professional now. Okay. For the first 2 years, he had issues with weight and injuries, and I don't think his focus was really all there on playing ball. Just happy, hey, I'm here. Mm-hmm. But you know, no longer on scholarship. Okay? Now, this is the big boy league, and I liked what I saw from Kendra Miller yesterday. Really did.
And the Saints' defense really didn't play that badly. What did they have, one explosive play or two?
He had a couple, but that, Tommy, it was all sort of dink and dunk.
Yeah.
It was not the huge play that got you. This game was lost because of self-inflicted injuries.
Yep.
And I mean, self-inflicted wounds on yourself. Penalties, drop pass,
missed field goal,
not understanding where you are out on the field. This was a self-induced shot here yesterday.
And I remember Deuce saying in one of the news reports that, you know, you're not going to win games if you kick field goals instead of score touchdowns, and we would have had three field goals but for the miss yesterday. And I just thought about those words as well as your words about the tight end and more. We'll pick it up. Yep. We come back. 6:30, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Saints had some chances yesterday. They did. Tommy Tucker, WWL, it's Mike Haas and Deuce McAllister on the call. Jeff Nowak on the sideline doing a great job yesterday. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. They'll be second-guessing this evening, 4 till 7 at the Silver Slipper on the beach, Hancock County, Mississippi. Mike, a word about that before we move on?
Okay, I agree with Deuce.
No, and about the Silver Slipper.
Oh, yeah, we'll be at Silver Slipper Casino, beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Baba J and I will be there from 4 to 6:30, and then there'll be the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show. Kellen Moore will join the Cannon and Mike Haas, myself, and his guest tonight will be Saints defensive line coach Bo Davis.
All right. So tell me about Deuce, and you agree with Deuce?
Because I've seen this so many times. They teach this at these defensive back camps. Mm-hmm. Okay, now the way they rule a catch is not only do you have to catch it, you have to control it. Watch that play, and Hoss is right. He's got it in his hands. He's bringing it in, and the old all-pro himself, Buda Baker, comes in there, and he rips it out. And that's what they teach you today because, okay, all these receivers, I could not say all of them, but most of them are these king-size guys. So if you're 5'9" and a half, which Buda Baker is, safety, 5'10", 5'11", you're going up against a 6'3", 6'4" guy, your deal is taught is if you're going to lose the battle, catch him on the second way. Now, it's a tough catch, and Juwan had it in his hand. He had to secure it. But watch what happens at the end. Buda Baker does what they teach all defensive backs now. Get in there and rake down at the ball and try to knock it out. And that's exactly what he did. So exactly what he did.
So I'm teaching a receiver, don't let him do that, right?
Okay, what you try to teach him is, man, once you get your hands on the ball, it's almost like you're trying to squeeze the air out of it, okay? And it's kind of a little bit of a chess match out on the field. But today, just the way the game is played and how they call a catch. So, you know, when you go to all these camps and you see guys teaching young defensive backs, okay, yeah, you want good coverage. You won't be able to come out of your transition quickly and, you know, kind of move your hips and get your eyes up the field. But the other part about it is, if you're going to lose the battle the first time, win the second part. That's what Baker did. He won the second part of that. Everybody said he dropped it. Well, I guess technically he did. But what happened on the play is he catches it. He's bringing it down to try to secure the catch. And Buda Baker just comes there and rakes it right out.
And look, in all fairness, these are professional athletes. All of this is going on very, very quickly.
It does happen
but
super
you know what
quick.
Else? And look, I'm not trying to second-guess anybody, but you'll do that tonight with Bobby Hebert, and you're the second-guess. But when it comes to the final series, I was hoping to see Devon Vele with his 6'5" there against maybe Buda Baker, 5'10", or whatever, using that big height advantage, throw it up, 50-50 ball, whatever you want to say. Why not?
My thing with Devon Vele is eventually he's got to be the guy to move the chains for you. He's got to be the guy on these slant patterns that you got to get the football to move the chains, get you the first down. And, yes, I agree as far as using his height.
Two targets, one reception, 13 yards.
Yeah. But my thing with Juwan Johnson, the play call was right. Okay? Now you got to kind of finish the deal.
And
the play call
right
was
too.
Good.
And the execution and Rattler, was right. Yep.
Rattler put it exactly where you'd have wanted him to put it. But I've seen it happen so many times that, okay, that DB, he knows, man, there's no way I can go up against a 6'3" guy. So if I lose the initial shot, I'll catch you on the way down. And that's what he did with Johnson. He caught him on the way down, and he raked the ball out.
For people that think the NFL is touch football, I would say you ask Chris Olave that this morning and ask him if it's touch football. Man,
listen. Week one, you saw some major league hitting out there. No, this is real man football. Mm-hmm. This ain't no practice league. It's no preseason. You saw some heavy-duty hitting out there on the field. And for a lot of these vets, come on, I know what I can do. What as a coach or a coaching staff, I don't know what a young player, how good he is. If he's a rookie, first-year guy, even a second-year guy, I don't really know how good he is out on the field. Put him in a regular season game and you find out real quick how good he is. Man, that was some big-time hitting going on in game one yesterday across the board. And even the Thursday night and the Friday night games, it goes to show you this league isn't for the meek.
Man, I'm going to tell you what, I texted somebody yesterday, even though the Saints lost the game. Man, it was good to have football back. What an
boy,
I'll
is
tell
it?
You what. Awesome. 6:50, 10 till 7. We'll pick it up. We come back. Traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL. A couple of minutes left with Mike DeTillier. Mike, I can understand if you get juked and you miss a tackle. I can understand if maybe you get the ball slapped out of your hands, maybe, but man, to not line up where you're supposed to be, to not be able to line up on a field goal, to have the penalties that they had, 13 penalties, I don't know how many yards it was, I'm trying to find it here, that's just about a touchdown. That to me is just inexcusable. And
that's
just,
focus.
Yeah.
That's all about focus. Understanding what you have to do, Tommy.
Pay attention. That's all you got to do.
Every
pay attention.
Snap.
Yep, every second.
Okay, because that's why you're there, okay? You a lot of people don't get it, that this game has some complications to it. And you got to know what to do on every snap. Not 50% or 70% all the time. And
not just where, not just on the snap, but where to line up before the snap, right?
Yeah. And so that is a lot about focus, understanding what you have to do each and every snap that's out on the field.
If you say,
well, that's why they practice. Okay. Well, then you got to either change the way you practice or change the players.
If I'm Kellen Moore, first thing I'm looking at is 13 penalties for 89 yards. That's the first thing I'm addressing because it would seem to me that's the lowest hanging fruit. Yes or no?
I would 2,000% agree.
Okay.
Can't have that and win in this league.
Nope.
Can't.
And that to me, again, is as simple as just paying attention and knowing what the hell you're supposed to do. And I guess they test. I don't know. Let's talk about third down efficiency. 5 for 14 ain't gonna cut it.
No, you'd like to try to at least get it to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of the low branch at that 50% mark. You'd like to do better. Yeah. But, 5 of 14, and it was at critical spots, mm-hmm. too. And it's not like the Cardinals have dynamic pass rushers. That wasn't the case yesterday.
That's the other thing I texted somebody, Mike. It would be different if the Cardinals were playing extraordinary football, and they weren't. They were playing fine. They weren't playing poorly or anything, but they didn't commit the mistakes that the Saints did, and it seemed as though they hung on to the ball when they had to.
They got a few more players than the Saints got,
mm-hmm.
and I used the term few. They got a few more than what the Saints have. But yesterday, for the Cardinals to get out of there with a win, I'm sure they thrilled to death,
mm-hmm.
Because look at the amount of penalties they had. I think it's 9
for 54.
I mean, listen, if I'm Gannon, I'm not happy about that either.
Absolutely.
That
not.
Here you had a quarterback who doesn't have much experience with a rebuilding football team, and they took us basically into the final round before we got a W. Now, this game's all about wins and losses.
Mm-hmm.
It's production league, and you came out with a win. But, man, not like the Cardinals are going anywhere this offseason other than buying a ticket.
I'll be a lot happier if I see the penalty thing cleaned up next week, win or lose against the 49ers. I certainly hope they win.
I agree.
But if I just see them play better.
That's what you hope to see from this team, week-to-week improvement in play and focus.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. We'll be listening this afternoon. Mike,
thank you, Tommy.
You bet. WWL NFL analyst goes to Sports Talk. Second guessing with the Cajun Cannon this afternoon on a beach in Hancock County, Mississippi. Jeff Palermo talking LSU. We come back. WWL. Beautiful morning. Got a nice breeze going. Highs of 87 today. Right now it's 70 degrees and nice. 88 for a high today, and then looking ahead to the rest of the week, it warms up a little bit, 86 for high today, rather 85 tomorrow, 88 on Wednesday, and then near 90 by Saturday, but dry throughout the week, and we got the statistical peak of hurricane season the day after tomorrow on Wednesday, and the tropics are quiet, so we'll take it. And that, as it stands now, a prediction from the NOAA and University of Colorado would appear to be way off, and let's hope it stays that way. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm okay. Full disclosure, I did not see the LSU game because I do not have ESPN Plus, and I didn't go with the bootleg versions that apparently are available. Tell me about the game.
Well, it was just a sluggish, lethargic game from LSU, particularly offensively. And Coach Brian Kelly expressed his displeasure after the game. And he said it was on everyone. He said it was with the coaches, it was the players, lack of execution. The scheme was bad. They got out-coached. So it was a variety of things that led to it. And I think we talked about it on Friday when I was on your show, Tommy, about, you know, it's human nature for there to be a letdown after playing a top five opponent on the road. Mm-hmm. You come back home, and even though it's the home opener and it's your first time in Tiger Stadium in months, you know, just sometimes the focus, the intensity is just not where it needs to be, or it wasn't where it was a week ago. And maybe, and that showed. And, you know, the game got off to an ominous start offensively. Braylon Moore, your starting center, goes down with a high ankle sprain on the first play. And on the first drive, Garrett Nussmeier underthrows Berrien Brown for an interception. And then it was just a struggle. Now, on the other side of that, defensively, the Tigers played great. Now, granted, Louisiana Tech is not a very good team offensively. They're really struggling to figure out, you know, how to get that offense going. It was a bad offense last year, and it's off to a bad start this year. But we've been sitting here clamoring for a good defense, and LSU's got it at least through 2 weeks. And so I think that's the good news, and I think it's just going to take a little more time here for this offense to get going.
You know, when it comes to so much emphasis being put on 1-0 and winning the opener and the big game against the big opponent, it's hard not to think that there would be a letdown, right? I mean, really, honestly?
Yeah, but I don't think anybody would have predicted LSU would just score 23 points. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's just very disappointing on the surface of it. And, you know, Brian Kelly said going into the week that, or into the game, that there's a certain standard that's expected out of an LSU football team. And regardless of who the opponent is, you need to play to that standard. And they didn't. And he let his disappointment be known in his post-game press conference. I mean, that was about as fiery as a coach that I have heard in a post-game press conference after a 23-7 win. He's just not going to say, okay, well, yeah, we had a letdown. Let's just move on to next week. I think he's going to drive the point home that, hey, this is a very talented team. And you just can't muddle through a game. You just can't go through the motions. You know, obviously you're playing an inferior opponent, so it doesn't cost you a win this Saturday. But this is a really good team, and you should play like it. And they didn't play like it, especially on offense on Saturday night.
I think an indicator of that, Caden Durham, 29 yards, 13 carries, only 128 yards as a team. That, to me, when it comes to running the ball, that is all about, and I understand he lost the center, but that's all about attitude. That's all about desire and determination. And if you don't run the ball against a team like Louisiana Tech, all due respect, that shows the desire, the determination isn't there. You think I'm making stuff up in my head or not?
No, I think you're right on, Tommy. And even Brian Kelly dismissed the idea of the fact that they lost Braylon Moore as a starting center. But I think that had a factor in it. I mean, Braylon played so well. I mean, he was the SEC offensive lineman of the week for his performance in the Clemson game. So he played so well in that game, and LSU did have a good running game, and it was, you know, it helped them obviously come away with the victory. But, yeah, I mean, 13 carries, 29 yards from your top running back against Louisiana Tech. Now, Louisiana Tech, they play a 3-3-5 stack. It's a little bit of a different defense. Actually, they're going to face it again this Saturday against Florida. They do a similar type of defensive scheme as well. And, you know, just LSU didn't perform well. And I think that is a bit of a red flag just because they struggled to run the ball last year. Run blocking was an issue for LSU, and granted it's nearly a completely entirely different offensive line, and you were hoping to see better. You were hoping to see a little bit better from that offensive line. And to be honest with you, and I know it's sometimes that I kind of hate doing this, but you take away Harlan Berry had a long run in this game, and if you take away that, the running numbers are really meager.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Florida Saturday night in Death Valley on ABC, national TV, doesn't light your fire, your pilot light is out, right?
Well, especially considering, you know, Florida's situation now, to get upset at home to South Florida, Billy Napier back on the hot seat. It's a Florida team that's going to come in desperate. Mm-hmm. So you better be ready for this game.
I think they will be. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We'll get your take on that when we return. Jeff Palermo, our guest, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, talking about the Tigers getting by Louisiana Tech. I figured there would be a letdown. Again, not that much of a letdown, but they did win 23-7. Good news is, and Tim Zimmer brought this up, is that it was not on the traditional broadcast outlets, so maybe a lot of people didn't see it, and they just see the score and then move on and keep LSU at number three. Not that it matters right now. We'll take a break for traffic, WWL. 7:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL. LSU still number three after a, I guess, lackluster performance, Jeff, would be a good phrase, against La Tech.
Yeah, I referred to it as lethargic. Yeah, lethargic, whatever adjective that you want to use in that ballpark, I think is a very good way of describing it.
What do we know about Tredez Green?
Well, Tredez Green suffered a knee injury in the fourth quarter, and based on what we're hearing, it's likely he will not play against Florida this Saturday. And but it's not a season-ending injury. Looks like it's something that he'll be able to bounce back. So you got Florida this Saturday, then you got Southeastern Louisiana the following week. So maybe he misses the next couple of weeks, and hopefully you can get him back for that Ole Miss game at the end of the month.
Tell me about this Florida team. Hey, first of all, let me take a step back. You know, you look at Oregon beating Oklahoma State 69-3. I've been around a while. I can never really remember LSU being the type of team, and this goes back to all different coaches and teams and everything else, to run up 69 on an opponent. Can you remember that ever happening?
No. Yeah, I don't necessarily remember 69 to 3
or 67 or anything like that.
Oklahoma State, my goodness, how bad have they gotten? Mm. And you have to wonder how much longer Mike Gundy is going to be the head coach there of the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about Florida.
Well, we were just talking about it. Just a really bad, disappointing loss. I mean, Florida finished the season strong so well last year, and there was this thinking, hey, even though they have a tough schedule, there's a chance that this team could be really good. But that's a really bad loss. Now, South Florida got let's give the Bulls a little bit of credit here. They beat a ranked team in Boise State to begin the season, and then now they go on the road in the Gainesville and they win there, but just a bad loss. And you got a defensive lineman who was ejected for spitting on a player during the game. I mean, just rough. But you, if you're LSU, you can't fall into the trap to think that, Florida is not very good, because again, there's a chance that, they can, for at least one game, really put it all together and play very well in Tiger Stadium. I mean, they got absolutely nothing to lose. But Florida is about ready to enter a very difficult stretch. They come to LSU, then they go to Miami, then they host Texas, and then they're at Texas A&M. So this can go from bad to ugly to really, really bad in a heartbeat here for Miami.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Miami or for Florida based on, you know, losing a really tough game against South Florida.
But for LSU not to be ready for Florida, I can't in my mind see that happening. I mean, how can you not get ready for an SEC opponent coming off this, what did you say, what was the word you used against lethargic performance?
You used the word atrocious.
Yeah, atrocious, whatever. But how they cannot be ready for an SEC opponent, primetime TV, a first SEC game, I can't see that happening. Can you?
No, you can't. It's got to be better. And you're just waiting for this offense to kind of come together a little bit more. And I don't know if it's because you got so many weapons now that you're trying to get the football to. You're trying to get people, you know, you still really haven't been able to get Chris Hilton involved at all here in the first 2 weeks. And so there's a lot of guys who are trying to get involved offensively, and maybe that's leading to some of the issues. But let's see. Well, maybe they could put it together and have a strong game against the Florida Gators on Saturday night. Yeah, Tiger Stadium should be alive, should be electric, and so it should be a lot of fun come Saturday.
If they're not ready, God help them. Thank you. I appreciate it, Jeff. You have a good week. We'll talk to you again. When we come back, we'll talk to Jason Shield, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. One of my favorite times of the week. We get to bank on it. Financial insights you can count on. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 7:43 here on this Monday morning. That's when we bank on it. Financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. How you doing, Jason Shields?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you this morning?
I am okay. It was a mixed bag on a weekend, but you know what? You live to fight another weekend, right?
Yeah, beautiful weather today, too, so it's always nice when you wake up to that.
Hurricane season's quiet. We'll take it. Let's talk about buy now, pay later, because a lot of people are taking advantage of that. Maybe they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, sure thing, Tommy. So today I wanted to start with talking about buy now, pay later and some important changes that are coming regarding credit bureau reporting, because this is It's a fairly big change that a lot of people really need to be aware of if they use buy now, pay later. But first I'll start with what is buy now, pay later, because I don't know that everyone who's listening may necessarily know about it.
I don't.
And so, yeah, if you've ever checked out online, you go to check out and you put your payment information in, you'll see this button somewhere that says, hey, pay this over 4 easy payments. In essence, that is buy now, pay later. There's a variety of companies that offer that. And basically what it is it's a short-term installment plan, right? 4 payments over 6 weeks. Once every 2 weeks, you pay 25% of the balance, and then it's paid off. Seems really simple. It's interest-free. But these companies wouldn't exist if they weren't making money, right, mm-hmm. Tommy? So the way that these companies profit is a couple of ways. One is merchant fees, right? Very similar. When you swipe your debit card, the merchants pay a percentage. It's usually, you know, 2 to 8%. And the merchants are happy to pay that because they get paid right away and they get an instantaneous sale. The other is consumer fees. So there's late fees, rescheduling fees, all those other various things. And then the bigger one that I don't think a lot of people know about is data monetization. So in essence, these buy now, pay later companies, after you use them multiple times, what they do is they start to figure out your patterns. And in essence, they become the vessel. They become your drug dealer, Tommy, right? They say, okay, I know what you like. I know when I'm going to serve it up to you. I know how often you pay. And so that's the real hidden thing, right? Everyone says, oh, the merchants pay for everything. But the amount of money they make off of your data is makes the merchant fees pale in comparison, to be honest with you. So what's changing with credit reporting is this. For the longest time, buy now, pay later it was a lot of people considered it an advantage, never reported to credit reporting agencies. And that could be good and it could be bad. If you're a good user of it, you would really want that info to be reported because it improves your credit worthiness. But if you're someone who misses some payments here and there, you're happy because it's not hurting your credit score. Well, that's going to start changing towards the end of the year. FICO, Fair Isaac Corporation, that's the people who make one of the scoring models that a lot of banks and mortgage lenders and everyone uses, are going to start rolling out their model that includes this buy now, pay later data. And so what that's going to do is it's going to change people's scores drastically if they're heavy users of this. And like I said, it could be bad, it could be good, but everyone should kind of be aware of it. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to flip a switch overnight and every bank's going to use this new model and start looking at your buy now, pay later data. Your progressive banks, your ones that really want to see that, are going to start using it relatively quickly. But your more traditional banks are probably not going to see that data for a couple more years as they start to wean into the process and understand those models. But definitely something for customers to think about.
So is it now? Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jason.
No, go ahead, Tommy.
No, I was just going to ask you, is it necessarily a bad thing or is it just the way you use it?
You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. You just want to be cognizant of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things when someone tells you it's not going to be on your credit report, maybe you don't care as much. You hate to think that way, but it's a potential. And so this is kind of more of a heads up for people who have been using Buy Now, Pay Later and maybe don't have the best history. They probably want to not do that anymore because it will start impacting your ability to get traditional credit, right? Mm-hmm. Credit cards and mortgages and auto loans and things of that nature. Some risks to the consumers. I always like to talk about these because, and I'm not, you know, buy now, pay later is just like any type of credit. It's a tool, mm-hmm. right? So as long as you know the risks that are associated with it, then it's not necessarily a bad thing. You just have to be aware of them. The biggest one is missed payments. I pulled some data and there were multiple surveys that showed 4 in 10 buy now pay later users have said they've missed at least one payment in the past 12 months. That's a shocking number. That's a 40% rate. It doesn't mean that those loans went bad. It just means that these folks said, hey, either I forgot to make the payment or I didn't have the funds to do it. So it's something to the numbers are big. The other thing that the buy now payment pay later companies will do is they'll offer you to reschedule your payment and charge you a small fee for it. Now, that's fine, but you can see how little dollars and these little microtransactions can cause that simple thing that you went to go buy that was interest free to all of a sudden cost you more than if you would have just paid it up front or even used the traditional form of paying for it that didn't charge you those things. So something that people should be aware of. And then There's a shocking trend of buy now, pay later that people are starting to use it for basic necessities like food, groceries, and things of that nature. And again, you probably shouldn't go get that Chipotle burrito if you don't have the cash for it. I'm not, you know, they're absolutely not judging. But
no, I understand.
What will happen is, let's just say you do this for 6 weeks, Tommy.
Wait. Hang on a second. I'm sorry, Jason, but I got to interrupt you. You're telling me that people go and buy a burrito and pay for it for 6 weeks?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And this isn't isolated incidents, Tommy. These companies have teamed up with DoorDash and the delivery companies because it's just an easy way for – they don't care. They're getting paid, right? And then the buy now, pay later companies take it on. So – but I'm gonna talk about the snowball effect, okay. Right, because I think this is important. These are six-week payment plans, Tommy. So let's just say you buy that Chipotle burrito and buy now, pay later for 6 weeks. So you're making six payments, right? And so in essence, when you make those payments for your buy now, pay later burritos – you're paying what you would have paid had you bought the burrito anyway, right? So it can very easily snowball on you. And then if you start stacking, if you accidentally miss a payment, late fees, these things can get really expensive. And again, if you use discipline, this can be like anything else. It's a tool, but it can also become a really slippery slope that can snowball on you, right? So just something people should think about.
How much is a Chipotle burrito? roughly?
I've seen them up to $20 these days, Tommy.
All right, so let's say $12. All right, so you're telling me people go in and buy, and I'm not judging, I'm just saying, a $12 burrito and finance that for 6 weeks?
Yeah. You know, the more common route that people do
and
is
pay
$2
a week
and delivery.
Pay $2 a week on it. That's I swear to God, I'm just old school and I can't believe this. Go ahead.
No, Tommy, I'm not judging. This is one of those things that I just want the listeners to be aware of. These things can snowball on
because, yeah, because what happens is you want another burrito, right? And then before you know it, you're paying off 18. No, I'm serious. I'm not joking. You got 8 burritos that you're paying off. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And in essence, it's the same amount as you bought the burritos and just pay cash, right? And I know we're harping on burritos, but it's a shocking example, right? The more real world example that gets out of control for you is groceries, right? Mm-hmm. If you're paying now if you're financing groceries over 4 to 6 weeks, it's a temporary solution, and so that's just what folks have to be cognizant of. It's a pretty slippery slope. And what happens with the burrito example is the most common vessel that people use is like the DoorDash or Uber Eats, right? And so not only do you have the $12 burrito, then you throw in a $3 delivery fee, and then you throw on the tip that you'll pay your driver. So that $12 burrito is probably $20 by the time it's all said and done. Mm. But it's real money, man. It is
real money, and at some point it's got to be paid back. And you're saying that starting when it's going to start to be reported to the credit bureau?
Well, by the end of the year, Fair Isaac is going to roll out these credit scoring models. So they'll slow. Look, banking's a slow industry at times, Tommy. It'll take a little while, but you'll start seeing these things, and by early next year, this data will be available. And I will leave your listeners with this. I think that it's not a bad thing to use buy now, pay later. You just have to understand it. And I think that some of your younger consumers who were just trying to establish credit or do things. They have what we call a thin file, which means nothing. These are trade lines. This is if they use it properly and pay on time, it could actually be something that shows creditors that they are a better credit risk, and it could be used as a door in to actually get a real big credit file, in essence.
Great information. Thank you, Jason. Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank & Trust. People want to know more about Gulf Coast Bank & Trust. How do they do it, Jason?
Yeah, gulfbank.com, Tommy.
Thank you, sir. Have a great week. Valuable information as always. 7:53, 7 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 8:15, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Barry Irwin, Chief Policy Officer for Leaders for a Better Louisiana, and talk about Louisiana's well-being trending up. How you doing, Barry?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. Tell me about the Leaders for a Better Louisiana. What is that?
Well, we are a group, as you may recall, used to be Cable Council for Better Louisiana and Committee of 100 for Economic Development, merged at the beginning of this year. And so now we're basically a new organization made up of a lot of the same pieces and parts of the old one. But that's who we are, and we've got a lot of things going on, and this indicators project is one of them.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, we started this actually back in 2023, and the idea was to take about 35 indicators that really kind of together kind of give us a picture of the state's overall well-being and track them year to year to see if we're making progress. So they're in big areas like education and workforce, the economy, you know, health and well-being, infrastructure, that type of thing. So, you know, the good news is this year we're a little bit better than we have been in the year since we've been doing it. I'll go back to last year, really, because it was very disappointing. Out of these 35 indicators, we had 16 going in the right direction, we had 16 going in the wrong direction, and then we had 3 that stayed about the same. That was not very good. This year, a little improvement. We got 20 going in the right direction, we have 13 going in the wrong direction, and 2 about the same. So, you know, not exactly where we want to be. We want to be seeing progress across the board. But the good news is, I mean, this is the best in terms of the numbers that we've seen since we started tracking it in 3 years, and hopefully it's something we can build on.
You know, it's easy to look at a list of indicators. How do you even go about determining what indicators you're going to look at to see about the overall well-being of the state, or at least to a metric, or at least how do you gauge it?
Yeah, I mean, we looked around the country. There are actually a lot of states that do this type of thing. Particularly, we looked at Texas and Arizona, which both have some projects similar to this that have been going on for some time. We didn't just copy their things, but we kind of looked at things that are important. I mean, we know certain things in the education area are critical. Kindergarten readiness, we know third grade reading is a real barometer. Eighth grade math, those kind of stand out. We know we need to increase our education attainment. That's important. The economy are things we think about all the time and talk about. Population, out-migration, jobs, those type of things. So really, it's easy to come up with a long list. It's actually a little harder to kind of narrow them down a little bit. But we came up with 35 of them.
Tell me what some of them are.
You know, the big ones, I think, in education, kindergarten readiness, as I mentioned, how are we doing reading and math? You know, how about, you know, our ACT scores, graduation rates, education attainment? Those are the things you would think about. Again, with the economy, again, the population numbers, employment, you know, median income. We're really also tracking, you know, some of that work like the Tax Foundation does in terms of our competitiveness with our tax structure and those types of things. Health and well-being, you know, life expectancy, infant mortality, low birth weight babies, obesity, heart disease, things that, you know, you would think of in those kind of areas. We put crime in that because we're talking about well-being, infrastructure, roads and bridges, of course, and broadband. And then with the environment and energy, we're looking at kind of air quality. We're also looking at, you know, the quality of water in terms of the water systems we have. We've got some issues with our rural and small water systems. Make sure we have safe drinking water.
You're talking about aquifers?
Now, I'm talking about really the smaller rural water systems, where those systems themselves have safety and compliance issues that have been going on.
The purification plants.
Yeah, the plant.
Okay.
And we've got more than 1,000 in our state. We don't think we have that many. We've got more than 1,000 across the state of these water systems. Mm-hmm. Big public ones that we're all aware of, but lots of small ones around the state where together a lot of people get their drinking water.
What about the areas that are going in the wrong direction?
I think we see the biggest areas in the wrong direction kind of in those health and well-being indicators. I mean, our life expectancy rate is going down. Very disappointing thing right there, if you think about it. Low birth weight babies are still a problem there. Infant mortality, food insecurity, those types of things. Those are the areas where we saw the most, you know, or see the most chronic, I guess, you know, hard to overcome issues. We're seeing some in some other areas, but frankly, there are things where I think we have an easier chance of making some progress. For instance, poverty rate and child poverty rate, those are bad. Those numbers are not good right now. But we're seeing some other things in the economy, I think, to give us hope to say we can deal with that. You know, some of these other, you know, kind of chronic health issues, they are a little bit more, you know, really difficult to get underneath and try and tackle.
Now, I mean,
the good news is,
well, let me take a break. Let me take a break. You can give us the good news when we come back, all right, Barry? Because we got to look at traffic here. Barry Irwin, Chief Policy Officer for Leaders for Better Louisiana. Talking about Louisiana Fact Book, Facts for the Future, Better Louisiana Indicators, Measuring the State's Well-Being, Trending Up Year to Year. We'll talk about the good news when we come back. 820 Traffic Now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on a beautiful Monday morning, September 8th. Hurricane season's quiet. We'll take it, right? And I guess a faux fall. I'm Barry Irwin, Chief Policy Officer for Leaders for a Better Louisiana. That's what I would call it, a faux fall. It seems like it, not really, but a little hint. Tell me about this Louisiana Factbook, Facts for the Future. What's the good news?
Yeah, I think a couple of areas stand out. One is kind of the same thing we saw last year where, you know, we've talked a lot about the improvement we've seen in some of our education indicators at the national level. Well, they're largely showing up, you know, in the local data, too. So that's very positive. Eighth grade math improving, mastery across grades 3 through 8 in kind of all the subjects together, improving ACT scores, actually holding flat. But when the rest of the nation went down, that actually made our rankings go up. So that was actually a positive in a way. Mm-hmm. But really good news in terms of education attainment and more kids graduating from high school with a credential or, you know, some kind of college credit. Those are all good things. And so we're seeing a lot of positive stuff there. I think the thing that stuck out a little bit this year was on the economy. We actually saw some population growth, which it wasn't huge, but if you kept up with the numbers, and I know you have, you know, the last 5 years, we have been losing people. Our population numbers have been going down year after year. So we kind of reversed that a little bit. still have an out-migration problem, but almost cut that in half in terms of the numbers leaving. But I think the good news, too, is on the job growth. We saw some really good info there in terms of, getting back to pre-COVID levels. We actually cracked the 2 million employed mark for the first time in 10 years. Now, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. That's a number that we've kind of seen as a benchmark of where we wanted to be at least consistently. But we've been below that, and we got up to that. And the last thing there is we actually outgrew the nation in terms of job growth over the last year, which is something we don't do that often. So I think some positive things in that area. And one last thing I'll say, we went down in one area of dealing with tax competitiveness, mm-hmm. but that one's going to go up as soon as the new numbers from the Tax Foundation come out a little bit later this year because of the changes we made last year during the special session. So some positive stuff in the economy and in education.
So in migration, which is a big thing, you're talking about increasing numbers, not losing people, right?
Well, what we actually did, we have been losing people in terms of out-migration for years.
Okay.
So we've still got an out-migration problem.
But not as bad.
The overall population number did go up. So we did have population growth in general, which, you know, was in spite of the out-migration numbers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and when you talk about job growth, is there any measure of types of jobs? Are we talking service industry, or do you know?
It's kind of across the board, but we're seeing it in our traditional sectors. Certainly hospitality and that type of thing, but also really, you know, in manufacturing, construction, healthcare related fields, all of those things. I think the good thing about this one too is, you know, these numbers are the numbers that are out, you know, that they lag a little bit behind. They don't reflect some of the policy changes we've made recently or these big new announcements that we've had about Meta and Hyundai and those types of things. So I think you're going to see more continued growth in this. So that's a positive, I think.
When it comes to improving on what you've improved upon already, what are the next steps in improving on those things that have not gone up?
You know, I think the biggest one in education is one that has kind of stuck out for the last few years, and that is kindergarten readiness. We have been going down in terms of kindergarten readiness. Primarily, that's through reading screenings. I'll just, you know, cut to the chase there. But that number has been going down. When we have been placing such an emphasis as we have on early reading, to have our kids, before they get to kindergarten, you know, prepared worse or at least less prepared than they were before, that is something we have to turn around. And again, that's early childhood education and those types of things.
Thank you, Barry. I appreciate your time. I really do. Barry Irwin, Chief Policy Officer for Leaders for a Better Louisiana. Nice to have some good news. We're going to talk to Brian Lagarde when we come back, criminologist and executive director of Project NOLA. He says the Cantrell administration released sensitive crime footage to a reality show without their permission. We're going to talk about that when we come back. And then in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll talk with Dr. Ron Bailey, professor and chief of psychiatry at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine, about suicide at Suicide Prevention Month and more coming up. So stay with us. Right now, we pause for WWL First News. For that, we go to our news director, Dave Cohen. 8:49, 11 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Next hour, we're going to talk to Dr. Ron Bailey, our friend. He's a professor and chair of psychiatry at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. September is Suicide Prevention Month. We're going to talk with Dr. Bailey about the importance of taking care of your mental health and how you can keep yourself or someone you love. And we'll also talk about suicide itself. While not a pleasant topic, it is important that we do what we can to prevent it and what leads people to perhaps consider taking their own lives. After a long football weekend, time to second guess. Today, every Monday at 4, you can join Bobby Hebert and Mike Dettelier for Second Guess Live on location at the Silver Slipper Casino in beautiful Hancock County, Mississippi. They're going to break down the Saints and NFL season opener plus LSU's first game in Tiger Stadium. Did the home teams live up to expectations? Then at 6:30, it's the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show with Mike Haas and the Cajun Cannon with head coach Kellen Moore. Followed at 7 by defensive line coach Bo Davis, then Haas and Dettelier with a focus on the NFC South at 7:30, and catch Monday Night Football Minnesota at the Bears on WWL and the free Odyssey app. I was looking at the video of this Lamar Jackson thing that's making a lot of noise about him pushing a fan, but the reports say that the fan tapped one player, Baltimore player, on the head, DeAndre Hopkins, and then tapped Lamar Jackson on the head. And that's not what happened at all. He pushed Lamar Jackson's head. That was a very, in my mind, aggressive mood. And I think years ago, I was going through one of these drive-through zoos in San Antonio with the kid in the back of the car, and I got the camera going, and a mule stuck its head inside the car to be fed. And I didn't realize, because I was looking at it through the viewfinder, that a mule had actually stuck its head inside my car. It was like I was watching it on TV. And I think sometimes with professional athletes, and it's happened in basketball before, where players have gone up into the stands, where you can verbally abuse these people if you want, but they are human beings. And when it comes to physically pushing on somebody, don't be surprised if they push you back. And I know a lot of big, giant, muscular people feel as though, you know, it's like a little gnat. Get away from me. I'm not going to be bothered by you. But everybody has a limit. So before, like me, you have a mule in your car, you might want to be aware of what's going on around you. We're having a little bit of a hard time getting a guest. So let's do this on a Monday morning. Let's play the Who Are You game. I'm going to go ahead and call a yellow 30 Omaha audible. Kill, kill. I'm going to play this little soundbite for you. If you know who it is, you can text me at 504-260-1870. Keep in mind, this is just for funsies. We don't have any prize, so therefore, there are no rules. You can either give me the character or the actor's name. As soon as you recognize it, text it into 504-260-1870. And I guess the only prize that's up for grabs are kudos. You get kudos, whatever that is, or a pat on the back. So as soon as I finish killing a couple of seconds here, you're going to hear the voice. When you do, you text in to 504-260-1870 and answer the musical question as posed by the Who, which is, who are you? Here we are, 920, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined now by Brian Lagarde, criminologist and executive director of Project NOLA. How you doing, Brian?
Hi, good morning. Doing well on yourself?
I'm well, sir. Thanks for taking the time. Tell me what's going on with the Cantrell administration and Project NOLA in this TV show.
Wow. Well, to our surprise, we learned that the mayor's office had the NOPD release extraordinarily sensitive very disturbing video from Project NOLA relative to homicides that occurred during 2025. In New Orleans, for entertainment purposes. It aired on a TV show called Homicide Squad New Orleans. This was done without the consent or knowledge of our crime camera host, as well as ourselves.
When you say sensitive, obviously I don't want you to say what it was, but it would be along the nature of?
What you would pretty much imagine, the very worst, people's dying moments, bullets piercing their bodies, the person dropping dead, things that should frankly not be on broadcast TV for entertainment purposes.
They show this on that show on A&E?
Well, they blur out the actual moment of death, but it's as far as what we're concerned about is the dignity of the dead, re-traumatizing the victims' families, for them having to revisit, what happened so fairly recently ago, cases that haven't been adjudicated yet, where the release of the video footage could taint juries or complicate the prosecution. It's for any number of different levels. This was just wrong. It was not footage for the city to provide. The network, or specifically 44 Blue, made repeated attempts to Project NOLA for us to participate with the show and to acquire the video footage from us, and we refused them. We didn't sign any waivers. We refused our participation with the show. And then, lo and behold, we find out that the mayor's office gave the video footage to 44 Blue, and it aired on network TV.
I don't have to dump on the mayor because I think, you know, she dumps on herself enough, but does she even own this footage? Whose footage is it? And it would seem as though you might have some copyright issues here. Is it public domain or what?
Well, it hasn't been adjudicated yet, so it hasn't gone to court. I don't even know if the defense has even received a copy of it.
I'm talking about the footage itself, though. Do you own that? Is that proprietary?
Project NOLA owns it, so the video cameras.
It was not hers to give away. It was not the city's to give away. Okay.
Right. Imagine this. So let's say you host one of our crime cameras. We give it to you. We give it to your listeners. The cameras go up on your home, businesses, churches, and schools. Project NOLA analyzes the video footage, finds footage that's relative to homicide, shooting, stabbings, home invasion, rapes, robberies, thefts, and burglaries. But, of course, right now we're talking about the homicides. So basically, it was footage taken from people's homes, businesses, churches, and schools that Project NOLA provided to the NOPD to help solve crimes, specifically murders. And the mayor released that copies of that footage to a production company for entertainment purposes and to help sell commercials.
And to be clear, churches, homes, businesses, and schools, the people that were hosting these cameras, they didn't sign up for this.
They definitely didn't sign up for this. Nobody did. It's not the purpose of why we do what we do. It's we're not here to help network TV make money. We're here to help solve crimes, reduce crime, to make our city a better place, and not for this.
Is the city getting anything out of it, as far as you know?
Well,
I know it's a question for the city, but I thought you might know.
When you look at the contract, the city's not getting anything out of it. However, there previously were ties between the production company 44 Blue and Councilmember Oliver Thomas. So it appears that Oliver Thomas previously worked as a consultant for 44 Blue and as a co-producer for 44 Blue, yet he championed legislation for the show to for the previous show called Night Watch to exist.
Hmm. So what recourse do you have now? It's out there already, Brian? And can you prevent reruns, or has it been broadcast?
Well, so we've already immediately...
Well, first of all, I should interrupt myself, because once it's out there, right?
It's out there.
Yeah.
We did send a cease and desist to the networks. We're hoping that that's going to work, and they're not going to show any more of our video footage. We've written the city council, and we're prepared, frankly, to pull the trigger to suspend the NOPD's access to our network of over 5,000 cameras around the city should the city not take reasonable steps to help protect people's privacy and respect the dignity of the dead. So, you know, this video footage should not be in the wild. It should not be on broadcast TV.
We cannot use administration and NOPD interchangeably here, right?
Well, so it was the mayor's office doing. They had the NOPD release the video footage. They had the detectives participate with the TV show. So it's, I mean, it's
a hybrid.
Of course, the NOPD, you know, they have to do what the mayor wants them to do as long as it's not illegal.
But wait, let me just get into the details here. So I presume it's a show where the detectives, like whatever it is, the first 48 hours where they go to a crime scene, they interview people, and it's one of these so-called reality shows. That's what this is?
Yes.
So
in this case, they follow the homicide detectives, just like in First 48. So, of course, First 48, then followed by a production called Jailbirds, then followed by a production called Night Watch. One by one by one, they were all shut down in the city of New Orleans due to public outcry, HIPAA violation, you know, possible HIPAA violations, you know, just not respecting the dead, things of that sort, privacy, of course, all these things made the city flare.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Up, demand that the productions be shut down, and then lo and behold, we suddenly have Homicide Squad New Orleans by the same folks.
So specifically, you can't say anything about a camera following a detective around. That's not your issue. Your issue is the footage from these cameras with Project NOLA being used without your consent.
Actually, both parts of that, okay. it concerns us greatly. So how we first learned of this was the very tragic homicide. Pretty much all homicides are tragic, mm-hmm. but the tragic homicide of Jacob Carter. So he was the owner of Howdy Bagel. He was a tourist from the state of Washington. He came down to New Orleans, and he was shot dead during a botched robbery. We saw the production crew behind the police tape filming over the body. So we saw the cameraman, the sound man, the producer, all behind the tape, and where the body was actually, you know, it remained on scene.
Now, you're a criminologist, yeah. Are you not?
Yes, I am.
Is that contaminating a crime scene?
Well, not if Crime Lab already went through it, and okay. It was the final step before the coroner's office. But it really goes back to the dignity of the dead. Mm-hmm. So you don't keep a body longer than it needs to be on the ground.
Right.
You know, you process the evidence, and then the body is obviously then taken away.
Well, and out of respect, they normally put up these black kind of shields, right, or whatever you call those things?
Correct.
Yeah.
And they still do, of course. But
in this case, they let the camera people go behind it,
yes,
with the NOPD's consent and take pictures of the dead body.
And stand next to the body, point the camera downwards, and film away. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, so somewhere there's B-roll of all that. And, you know, why? The question is why. The family of Jacob Carter reached out to us, after we posted a recent picture showing the film crew standing over the body, you couldn't see the body, but you knew it was there. Mm-hmm. And the family's very upset. They've been reaching out to the mayor's office, to city council members, to the NOPD. They don't understand why it would be allowed, a film crew would be allowed behind the crime scene tape and so close proximity to the body, where the body was allowed to remain on the sidewalk in the presence of cockroaches and whatnot, just to shoot some B-roll.
Mm. For people that don't know, explain what B-roll is, please, Brian.
It's just where
extra
I'm sure
footage.
People out there that can better explain it, but it's basically when you simply burn some film of a particular scene, you know, in this case of a body. So where you just stand over, you shoot a city block, whether it be Bourbon Street or whatever. But in this case, you know, sometimes we have news crews that come over to our office and they want to shoot some B-roll of our monitoring rooms with the screens up, things like that. Well, in this case, it was B-roll of the body sitting, you know, laying on the ground.
Let me give the AI definition here. It's secondary supplemental video footage shot independently of the primary subject to add context, visual interest, and emotional depth to a video. Not getting into TV production here, but sometimes a news photographer will call it, specifically in this case, but hosing the place where they just shoot everything. And then when a reporter goes to put the story back together, if they have to cut away to something, they have the B-roll to show pictures of this or that or the other thing to make the story make sense. So with that being said, I want to take a break here and talk about, if you have a couple of more minutes, about Project NOLA in general, can we?
Absolutely.
Right,
I'm here.
Thank you. Brian Lagarde, criminologist, executive director of Project NOLA. Somebody texted in and said, the city has a crime problem and that we need to show how bad it really is. Cameras don't lie. Well, I disagree. You can imagine if that would be your loved one who was a victim, had absolutely nothing to do with any of this. We're not talking about a criminal. You're talking about a victim that was killed during a robbery attempt. All of a sudden, you got a camera guy standing over that person with a camera. How would you react to that? No, I wouldn't react very well. 931, traffic now, WWL. 938, 22 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Brian Lagarde, criminologist and executive director of Project NOLA. So apparently the Cantrell administration deciding to release video footage from Project NOLA's cameras that the people with the churches and the homes and the businesses that all of these things are schools that are attached to didn't sign up for could potentially compromise prosecution. It's terribly insensitive to the victims' families, and he's trying to get it stopped. Tell me about Project NOLA in general, if you will, please, Brian.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. So we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We've been around for over 15 years. We operate the National Real-Time Crime Center, which is located at the University of New Orleans. We started in New Orleans. We have over 5,000 cameras in New Orleans. We're also coast to coast in many other cities. And so we help analyze video footage. And everywhere we go, we are extraordinarily successful at helping to reduce crime and making communities safer places to live, work, and visit.
For people that are texting in only one person and thinks you want a cut of the action, or, and look, people text different things, Brian, that's the only reason I pass it along, and maybe it's reflective of what other people think. I want you to address it. You don't want to make anything off of this footage. You don't want the footage released, and tell me why.
Well, so we're a nonprofit. Nobody owns Project NOLA. I'm the director, but I certainly don't own it. I certainly don't own the video footage. We've had the opportunity many times over to participate with the TV shows, sell the footage, make money off of it, but that is not what we do, not for 15 years. We haven't sold or provided video footage to third parties. We are here to help reduce crime and improve the quality of life and not to make money. That's why Project NOLA is a 501c3. So we're upset because the video footage is only lending to re-victimizing families. It is not respecting the dead. And it's compromising criminal prosecutions. That's why we're not happy about it.
Has the DA,
and we don't.
Has the DA gotten involved in any of this at all?
So they're aware of the situation. I know that you know, I cannot speak on their behalf,
right,
but I can tell you they're not happy. Nobody wants to see this video footage out there. I haven't met a person that wants to, other than, and I'm only stating the facts here, where, you know, we know that Oliver Thomas supports this type of TV show because he's worked as co-producer and as a consultant for these type of shows. Obviously, the mayor has no problems with this. But other than that, I haven't met a single solitary person that wants to see this happen. There's just no good that comes of this.
And a text comes in and says, who owns the footage? Project NOLA owns the footage, right?
So Project NOLA owns the footage. So the cameras on people's homes, businesses, churches, and schools. It's all recorded on our servers at UNO. And the people that host our cameras, they empower Project NOLA to analyze the video footage and provide video footage relative to crimes, specifically felony crimes and missing exploited children, to law enforcement. That's what we do. They do not empower Project NOLA to sell the footage or anything like that, nor would we ever. Again, that's why we created a 501c3. We're not here to make money. It was the footage in question. Obviously, we weren't aware of what the city was going to do. We certainly didn't give our permission, and they did it anyway.
I don't want to get lost in the weeds here, but as I often say, if you've ever played golf for money, you know that's where all of the cheating happens, or most of the cheating happens. I think people are texting in about First Amendment and expectations of privacy, et cetera, but what they don't realize is if you are on the street and you happen to be at a murder scene and you take footage of it, that is your footage. And the person that, whoever is out on the street, has no expectation of privacy. And I'm not trying to make myself a media lawyer here, but as I understand it, but the footage belongs to the person who took it, correct?
Yes. But that's not the only issue here. What we're hoping is, and what we frankly expect for the city council to do, is to draft a new city ordinance that not only protects Project NOLA footage, but any private video footage that's provided to the NOPD relative to a felony crime, especially violent ones, where that footage that's provided to the NOPD shall not be turned over to TV production companies for entertainment purposes. So it's one thing for the New Orleans Police Department to occasionally turn over video footage to local media saying, you know, anybody that can help identify this person, please call Crime Stoppers. That's different. That's permissible. That's expected. But to give footage away of, you know, involving the dying moments of a person, the distress on the family members that might be present and friends, that's not for the cities to give, nor should ethically they be doing it. We would like to see a city ordinance that would prohibit the NOPD and other city organizations from providing that type of video footage to network television for entertainment purposes.
Have you worked with any council member on that or spoken to him?
Councilmember Morrell reached out after he learned what happened. We were supposed to go, I forget the meeting date, but it's later this month, to go ahead and discuss what happened. But we do want to see a new ordinance drafted that would protect private video footage.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to get involved here, but I can't help but realize the irony of the mayor, who was photographed in public from across the street, attacking the person who photographed her and exposing private information because of her expectation of privacy, which she had, as a public official, certainly doesn't have any. But yet she's willing to allow footage that belongs to somebody else to be used in a program that the city gets nothing out of. Am I inaccurate there or not?
You have a very good point.
Wow. Tell me about, if somebody wants to get involved with cameras for Project NOLA, what does the network look like, and where does all of this footage go? I want you to take me from Project NOLA ground up.
Sure. So anyone that's interested in participating, they just go ahead and give us a call, or they visit our website, projectnola.org. We can either see about tying a person's existing cameras into our network. Or, you know, very often people take one of our free cameras that we provide. So we don't sell cameras. Mm-hmm. We provide them free of charge, people who want them. The only thing that anyone pays Project NOLA is a little bit that it costs us to receive, record, rebroadcast back over to the NOPD, LSP Troop NOLA. If you're in Jefferson Parish, we stream to JPSO, same for St. Bernard, Plaquemines, St. Tammany, and you know, well beyond from there. So the hosts have access to the footage. Project NOLA has access to the footage. Law enforcement in that particular jurisdiction has live and playback access of the footage. We're looking for suspicious activity, crimes in progress. We're looking at the felonies. We're not looking at the small things. We don't get involved in civil matters. We don't get, you know, involved in traffic accidents unless it's a, you know, a hit and run or a fatality. So we're focusing on the felonies, the crimes that are harming people.
So at the Project NOLA headquarters, there are numerous screens where this footage is being fed, or somebody's gone through it afterward, or what?
Oh, no. It's just like what you would imagine. And so rooms with video walls where we're analyzing the video footage. We're very greatly driven nowadays by AI. Mm-hmm. So it helps us figure out, you know, what cameras, because we have a lot of cameras. Mm-hmm. So AI helps us you know, pick up on anything from in real time. Possible instances of illegal trash dumping, to possible gunfire, to, of course, because we're using live facial recognition on certain cameras. If a wanted person crosses paths with one of our cameras, then it also alerts us live and in real time that a wanted person is possibly just entering the French Quarter, for example.
Somebody texted in and said, I'm confused. Was it footage or footage from the cameras? To be clear, you were saying you had a problem with both. First of all, you have a big problem with the footage that Project NOLA owns being released by the city to a private production company without your consent, and you would not have given consent ever for that to happen. The other is you have a problem. You don't think it's right that these production companies should have rights to step into a crime scene and photograph the victims. That's got nothing to do with Project NOLA. That's a different issue that you have with NOPD allowing this. Accurate?
Right. So okay. I'm putting two hats on. I'm putting my hat on as director of Project NOLA, but I'm also, you know, as someone that resides in Orleans Parish. So as you mentioned earlier, just like we wouldn't want to see one of our loved ones or someone that we know be exploited for entertainment purposes, especially, you know, their death. So it's I would hope that a lot of people listening to this have a problem with that. People should not be exploited, especially in death. And it's just wrong. That's why we oppose what has happened. And again, as you said, it's not just involving Project NOLA cameras. It could be cameras on your house or anyone else's house. You know, someone that provided extraordinarily graphic and sensitive video footage to the NOPD relative to a homicide. And the next thing you know, it's on broadcast TV for entertainment.
So when it comes to people that want to join, if they have a Ring camera, is that enough on a doorbell, or they need to tie it into the system? Take me through that process.
Well, some cameras are proprietary, like Ring, so we can't actually ingest a Ring doorbell. Mm-hmm. But if for people who have CCTV systems through local installation companies, a lot of times we can ingest the signals from those with people's permission, of course, where they give us the password or create a special password that only allows Project NOLA access to certain cameras on their system. So whether we ingest existing video signals from existing cameras on people's homes, businesses, churches, and schools, or we provide them with one of our free cameras, that's usually a lot better than what people have out there. They see a lot further. We can see faces over 700 feet away in darkness. So, you know, a lot of times people will supplement what they already have with one of our cameras. And you were asking earlier, like, you know, how much might that cost? Mm-hmm. It can cost as little as $300 a year for us to receive, record, rebroadcast a video signal to local law enforcement. And anything anyone pays us is tax deductible, since we're a nonprofit organization and the cameras benefit the entire community.
So do you provide the cameras, and do you have a waiting list for cameras, or how does that work?
We're doing pretty well with donations and people that are helping us. The monies that we receive for us to purchase the cameras that we then hand out, we would not want to advertise or you know, we don't have salespeople, things like that. It's all basically we're nerds and criminologists at the office. But so at the pace that people are asking us for cameras, we're able to keep up with the demand. Mm-hmm. So anybody out there that, especially if you're in a high crime area, if you go outside and you have hand-to-hand drug transactions or something bad going on down the street, or if you're just concerned about someone breaking into your car, call us. We can help with that. We help people every day with it.
Is this Orleans Parish specific or not?
Oh, no, it's all over. So we focus on Orleans Parish from, you know, well, from the beginning. That's where we started. Mm-hmm. But we also feed into the Real-Time Crime Center for Jefferson Parish, St. Bernard, St. Tammany, Plaquemines, Baton Rouge. I mean, just keep on going outwards from there, from California to New Jersey to Florida. In many points in between, we're serving communities.
So somebody just contacts you, that's it, and then you hook the camera up?
So we're not an installation company.
Okay.
So they have to have either someone they already know, or there are certain installation companies locally that is their way of giving back to the community. They'll install our cameras at discount. So, you know, if you want additional cameras, you're probably going to pay the normal price for that. But for any Project NOLA cameras, usually those are installed at discount. And what that looks like is a person calls us, they sign up to host a crime camera. If they don't know somebody, we can give them the names of the different companies that will do it at a discount. Or again, they can use anybody they like. The installers come by our office, picks up the equipment, brings out to the person's location, puts the camera up, puts the app on their phone, shows them how to use it. They don't need to know how to access the camera, but a lot of people like to. And of course, the camera doesn't have to record there because we're recording it at our office. And so in the end, you know, they see it, Project NOLA sees it, and local law enforcement sees it.
When it comes to the use of the footage, it's anonymous as to who it came from?
So We don't discuss who our crime camera hosts are. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, so we help protect their identities. If you were to host a crime camera, you know, and, you know, I wouldn't say anything about it unless you brought the subject up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we very closely guard the privacy of our crime camera host. So, you know, we certainly do what we can do.
Well, we got to run, Brian, but I got to ask you real quick. When it comes to in the future, you know, hopefully you would think, depending on who gets elected mayor, this is going to go away. But secondly, if it doesn't, would you consider cutting off access to NOPD? And that would have a bad effect, would it not?
Regrettably, we're already in a position where we're having to think of doing that right now. So we told the city council and the NOPD, if we see more of our video footage on network TV for entertainment purposes, we're suspending the NOPD's access until we have a new mayor or there's some type of provisions in place that protects private video, whether it be Project NOLA or third parties.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. Brian Lagarde, criminologist, executive director of Project NOLA. You know, there's statistics, type one, type two errors. One is something's wrong and you don't fix it. The other is something is not wrong and you break it. And this seems like the something's not wrong and they broke it. 9:53 back in a flash, WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.